Glenn Hagstrom is Principal Executive Director of the Office of Acquisition Logistics and Construction and the Acting Chief Acquisition Officer at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Glenn, it's great to have you on the program today. Tell me about your top acquisition priorities for 2014, the things you're going to focus on the most for the rest of the calendar year.
Sure, Francis. It's a pleasure to join you today, and thank you very much for the invitation. When we look at our acquisition priorities in the department, we've always focused first and foremost on ensuring that our acquisition workforce has the proper tools in order to accomplish their job for our internal customers and our clients who are the veterans, their families. We're very focused on this, and back in 2008, we stood up the VA Acquisition and Academy. We're very proud of that. It's received numerous accolades from both the federal government and from the private sector in terms of our curriculum and our teaching methodologies. And we've expanded that over the past couple of years to have an intern school where we bring folks in and start them on an acquisition career, principally contracting, in the federal government. We've brought up a Warriors to Workforce where we take our young men and women coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan and put them on a federal acquisition career using their GI Bill. We've got a contracting school, program management school, supply chain management school, and a facilities management school. And we're continually to develop these capabilities to ensure our workforce and should other civilian agencies want to participate in those opportunities to provide them the necessary training they need to build their workforce.
The Acquisition Academy has really been a success story. I've talked to Melissa Starinsky on this program a number of times, and she cites the amount of what you just referenced, which is other agencies coming to her and coming to you and saying, how do you do it? How can we figure out ways that we can apply what you're doing at VA to the way we're doing it at our agencies?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's certainly not easy. By the way we operate and how we budget for ourselves, the secretary has been very good, and he said, I want to focus on education. And as a result of that, we look to our priorities, we build those priorities to ensure those capabilities are there so we've got the right talent in the right place at the right time to get the job done.
Having the workforce have the tools they need is one thing. How have tighter budgets all across the government affected the way that your acquisition workforce operates morale-wise, retention-wise? You know, recruiting them and training them is one thing. Once you've invested in them, certainly you want to keep them on board.
You know, Francis, we have been very, very fortunate in this department in that the president has been very focused on providing the resources to American veterans to ensure that the country provides the access, the benefits, and the memorializations services that they've earned through the service to our country. When you look at VA's FY 2015 budget request, we're seeking almost $164 billion. That's about 3% above our 24 enacted funding level. And, you know, again, we've been very fortunate, as opposed to some other the civilian agencies and DOT, in that we've not been subject to the budget constraints or sequestration that were faced by the other agencies over the past years.
What kind of churn are you seeing in your workforce, and what kinds of people are you looking to bring in?
You know, I think when you look at the whole national capital area, if you will, it's a very, very competitive market in terms of what we're doing. So when you look at the attrition rate that we've experienced over the past couple of years, we're at about 9.5% or so, and we've felt that it's manageable. The folks that we're looking to bring in, clearly, that have experience in our mid-level, upper level, but also our opening level, so that we are building our acquisition workforce in terms of future requirements and developing not only the skills but the leadership that we're going to need in order to serve our veterans in the future. So when you look at it, not only contracting officers, we're very focused on folks with qualifications for program management, budget analysts, cost and pricing, the whole gamut of what it takes to put a very successful and robust acquisition program in place for a department of this size.
When somebody applies for a job in the acquisition department at the Department of Veterans Affairs, what makes them a good candidate? What qualifications do they have? What are they able to do? What experience do they bring? Or what background that might make you think that with the Acquisition Academy or some of the other resources you have, they could turn into a good acquisition professional for you?
You know, I think when you look at the diversity of our contracting and acquisition staff that we offer, certainly, of course, we're very heavy in the medical field in terms of procuring medical supplies, equipment, services, as we are in construction and IT, pharmaceuticals. So when you look at it, what I think we're looking for is folks who bring a diversity in their career in terms of being perhaps at multiple agencies, perhaps being in both public service and private service to bring that perspective to us. We have strategic acquisition centers at the National Acquisition Center focusing on federal supply schedule for medical, the Technology Center in Eatontown, New Jersey, focusing on IT, and our strategic acquisition center in Fredericksburg, Virginia, that focuses on strategic sourcing for non-IT. So from the field level to headquarters level to center level, I think we have a complete offering for folks where they might find their interest lies.
Glenn Hagstrom's the acting chief acquisition officer at the Department of Veterans Affairs. You said one of the magic words in acquisition right now, strategic sourcing. We'll come back to that later in our conversation, Glenn. But I wanted to talk more about your workforce and what you perceive to be the potential health of that workforce in the future. Everybody knows the perception that a lot of people have, especially some folks in Congress, about the federal workforce in general. And quite honestly, if you're growing really good acquisition people, there's a fairly robust industry that would love to pick some of those folks off. And so I wonder about strategies that you might be have in place or be putting in place to make sure that you keep the best of the folks that you really want to keep.
Well, I think the way we offer our programs, and I think what we offer to our acquisition workforce in the training arena is a tremendous opportunity for many people out there who may not necessarily have those things within their current agency. You know, I think one of the greatest things, and when you talk to members of Veteran Affairs, regardless of it, who it is, a clinician, an administrative contracting officer, it's the mission here that really drives the performance of our people and our desire. At the end of the day, when you walk out of an office at VA, you know you have helped a veteran or a veteran's family or a survivor somewhere across this country get what they need in order to make life better for themselves. And that's really what we find over and over and over in our surveys is what drives our workforce.
Let's go to strategic sourcing, Glenn. What's kind of the state of the art of strategic sourcing at VA? How are you using it? You mentioned some of the centers that you have that are specializing in it. Tell me how that's working for you.
It's working fabulous. You know, we're not only looking at strategic sourcing, and we've done this for a long time with what we call national contracts that were put into place at the National Acquisition Center out of our office in Hines, Illinois. But we're also now looking at not only strategic sourcing as a ways, but to look at managed spend and taking a look at what we're spending, where we're spending it, how we're spending it, what we're paying for, and making some conscious decisions on if we're spending this and doing that, does it make sense to put an enterprise contract in place or not? So we're trying to balance this in that, of course, we're looking for a great return on investment, being able to leverage our spend, but it also has to have value added for the contracting and program staffs in terms of simplifying their work and being able to get our goods or services to our requirements folks in a much quicker manner.
You mentioned you've been doing this for a long time, and my understanding is that your strategic sourcing efforts predated the administration's efforts to do it. When the administration came along with the strategic sourcing initiative, how much of what you were doing looked like what they wanted your colleagues at other agencies to do?
Quite a bit of it. In fact, we have teamed very robustly with the Office of Procurement and Federal Policy to make this happen. In fact, the initial services or the business supply contract was started here in VA, and then we worked that with GSA to finally put that initial offering into place. So we've got a tremendous team engaged in looking at IT opportunities and medical opportunities in terms of where we're going, and we're very proud of that.
Now, some industry groups and some companies have expressed a little bit of, let's call it, unease with strategic sourcing. Since you've been at it a little bit longer, is that something that you've been able to work through, maybe get past, and do you think there may be lessons that you've learned in that that other agencies could use in their conversations with vendors?
Well, I think this is a matter of focus in terms of working with our requirements generator and our contracting staff to move forward to put a vehicle in place. One of the things we're absolutely committed to and focused on is that when we put an enterprise contract in place, whether it be at the federal level or the department level, there absolutely must be an opportunity for our service-disabled-owned veteran companies and our veteran-owned companies to participate. And that has been a hallmark of what we're doing. I remember several years ago when we were putting what we call the T4 contract in place at the Technology Acquisition Center, there was a great deal of angst from the small business community and our veterans especially in terms of their ability to partake in that. When you look at the history of that contract over the past 5 years or so, over 60% of the task orders that we've issued have been to our service-disabled and small businesses to execute our requirements. So there is definitely a place for small business in the department's enterprise contracts.
And I find it interesting and a positive that you went right to small businesses and the service-disabled, veteran-owned small businesses without me even having to take you there. That, to me, says this is a big priority and will continue to be so. What nuggets could you pull out of that to give to somebody at another agency who may not be in the same situation that you are, percentage-wise or just plain old relationship-wise?
You know, I think we found out the hard way, and it's not uncommon perhaps across the acquisition world, is that we've got to do a better job in government of articulating what our requirements are up front. And we've worked very hard on that over the past several years so that when we put a requirement out to industry, they're not in search of what does the government really want in terms of what do they want me to deliver. So we've worked with industry, we've worked with program managers, we've worked with our contracting staff to be able to clearly state what our needs are. And as a result, I think industry is much more comfortable in terms of providing solution to us. And at the same time, they've told us that if you are clear on your requirements, we can certainly decrease the amount of risk they are carrying, the contractor, in terms of proposals that they offer to us.
You mentioned OFPP earlier, and in the tenure of both Dan Gordon and Joe Jordan, they have been pretty active with the MythBusters campaign overall at promoting relationships and conversations between industry and vendors. How has that help to shape the relationship that you have already in place and that you have developed further with the vendors that you do business with at VA, Glenn?
I think it's been a very important part of it. During the first term of this administration, Scott Gould, who was our previous Deputy Secretary, challenged us to work with industry to move forward in terms of our relationships improving them. And we established a supplier relationship transformation effort. And what we have done over the past years is on a quarterly basis, we go out to various venues in the country. We meet with our businesses who not only service VA but are interested in servicing VA, talk to them, get an understanding of their concerns, how they believe we can improve our performance, and they can react to that. The other big thing that we've done is both at the Technology Acquisition Center, the National Acquisition Center, and the Strategic Acquisition Center, is we hold annually advanced planning briefings to industry. And that's an opportunity for industry to come in with respect to those particular areas of contracting expertise that they have to have a clear picture of what the department will be looking for in the upcoming fiscal year and allow them to make a business decision should they be interested, But even more importantly, it presents a great teaming venue for them to meet with other suppliers and potentially develop those teams in terms of providing the needs to the department.
Glenn Hagstrom is Acting Chief Acquisition Officer at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Glenn, you paint a pretty positive, pretty rosy picture there, but nobody's perfect, and I'm curious how you would like to see moving forward the relationship between industry and your agency get closer and improve even more.
You know, and I think that, Francis, that goes to all about communication, and sometimes we're not too good at that. So we're working very hard in terms of planning conferences. We have advanced solicitation, requests for information, getting feedback from industry before we put the final proposal out there for them to respond to. Post-award conferences, closeout conferences, those are all important things that perhaps we can do better with in terms of providing that back and forth between our supplier community and the government to improve in future acquisitions.
You talked about articulating requirements better, Glenn, and when you go back and look at acquisitions that came off well, where you can say, yeah, we did a pretty good job of articulating the requirements there, and that set us up for success, what were some of the techniques that you used to do the requirements well? Because you're certainly not the only agency that's putting an emphasis on that.
Certainly. One of the things that we've done with regards to the Technology Acquisition Center and the Strategic Acquisition Center is it's just not a contracting shop. When you look at it, the people we hired, they're subject matter experts in engineering, systems architecture. We have some clinicians on our staff at the SAC. We also have programmatic offices that carry through the life cycle of the acquisition, taking a look at EVM and those kinds of things to see if we're encountering problems. So it's a matter of bringing all these teams together and getting them to talk together. And one of the things that we found that was extremely beneficial to us is, although it takes time, but on complex acquisitions, we believe it's worth the investment to go out with multiple rounds of comments to industry and ask them for input so we can improve the request that we're ultimately going to be putting out on the street.
So it sounds like you're trying to go beyond the traditional end user and acquisition team conversation, the communications that we've seen in the past work, and have SMEs actually in the acquisition shop. We'll go back to a part of the conversation we talked about earlier, which is the recruitment and retention phase. How is that going for keeping those kinds of people engaged in the acquisition piece of it when they have a high level of technical expertise?
It's been very successful. We're very positive in terms of the positions we're offering, the responsibilities. And, you know, one of the things we found is location. People like where they are. They like to be up in Frederick, Maryland, where we are, in Fredericksburg, Virginia. As simple as it may sound, they don't have to fight that 95 north traffic in the morning. And so quality of life, we run virtual offices where people telecommute with the exception of having to come into the office for either training or to meet with a client. So all these things from the standpoint of the IT process we put in place, how we function, the latitude we give our employees to operate, the quality of life, all those things we've seen are making a tremendous difference in the interest we obtain and the longevity of the folks that we're keeping to continue our mission.
Congress is pressuring agencies all across government to use suspension and debarment more for contractors that they at least perceive to be misbehaving. Is that a tool that you're seeing more use of at VA, less use of, about the same? What is your experience with suspension and debarment?
You're absolutely correct. And we have seen a tremendous increase in the past couple of years. In 2011, we had a little over 50 actions to 127 actions in 2013. So we're looking at a couple 100% increase in the last couple of years. Certainly, we don't use that authority without understanding what the full consequences are, but we have increased the looking at our contractors. and exercising the department's right in those cases where we need to.
What impact has that had, if any, on your overall relationships, not just obviously with the contractors that are involved in those, but in general? Has it really impacted those relationships at all?
I think for the most part, the contractors take a positive look at that, obviously, if you're not being, if you're not one of the ones being debarred. But I think our contractors would respect it in terms of if there's a problem out there, the department is facing it, and certainly we're dealing with it. And I think especially with our veteran-owned contracts and things like that, they're very concerned about people who portray themselves as service-disabled veterans or veteran-owned businesses who, in fact, do not have the right to claim that. And we take action to correct that.
Glenn, those are all the questions I have for you. I really appreciate your time. I thank you for talking to me about these issues today.
Appreciate it very much, Francis, anytime.